Welcome to the podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about the rationale for high molar dose and how this is really translated into clinical practice. I'm joined by my good friend and renowned retina specialist, Peter Kaiser. Peter is at the Cole Eye Institute, professor of ophthalmology, amongst other titles. Peter, how are things going?
Yeah, thanks, John. It's always great to be here on a podcast with one of my favorite retina specialists.
Fantastic. Well, Peter, today we're talking about high molar dose medications, and really specifically, we're talking about aflibercept 8 milligrams. What is the concept behind increasing the dose on a medication? Is there anything beyond just, more of a good thing is going to be better?
Yeah, I mean, there's many ways to make a given drug last longer. You know, the chemists have ways to make drugs last longer. One would be to increase its half-life, for instance. In general, that requires making the drug bigger. So in this case, aflibercept is one of the largest molecules we have. So it already had a nice long half-life. The other is to improve the dissociation constant, the so-called KD, so it binds tighter. And that'll make a drug last longer. But with the aflibercept, we're already at the picomolar range. So you really can't improve that. But the next thing you can do is increase the dose. And so if you increase the dose, that increases the durability in the eye because the eye is a fixed structure. So in this case, we would expect that if you're taking the dose 4 times higher, that would be roughly 2 times the half-life. That would be the mathematical modeling. But the interesting thing is, modeling was done based on basically a bunch of aflibercept patients, both with zivaflibercept and ocular aflibercept, to look at the clearance of free aflibercept when you moved it to the 8 milligrams dose. And interestingly enough, in that modeling, there was about a 1/3, about 34% slower ocular clearance with the 8 milligram dose. So you would expect 2 times the half-life, but in reality, this modeling would suggest anywhere from maybe 6 to 9 weeks longer median time of the 8 milligrams versus the 2 milligram. But the whole goal of increasing the dose is to make the drug last longer.
And you hit on something that I think you presented at this most recent ARVO, the 2024 ARVO, which was the poster really investigating that. What is the rationale behind why we get 34% longer or slower clearance with this higher dose? Is there any theories behind that?
Yeah, there's many theories. Technically, the drug, the aflibercept in 8 milligram and aflibercept in 2 milligram are identical, but there's obviously other things within the drug product because it's not 4 times the volume that we're injecting. In fact, it's much less. And so basically that concentration that they had to do changed the drug product a little bit, mainly the stuff around the aflibercept. And because of that, the drug appears to last longer. And this is a surprising thing. It actually, when the analysis was first done, it was redone several times because everybody's like, how in the world does it last a third longer? It really shouldn't. But then when the modeling was redone and looked at multiple different ways, indeed, it lasts longer than the mathematical modeling would predict.
And Peter, this is something that's always been hard for me to kind of conceptualize, and I'm sure many of our listeners don't have an idea, but how do we determine the half-life of a drug in the eye?
So there's a couple of ways you can do that. One is you could basically take sampling, and most drugs, when they're in phase 3 testing, they'll do sampling, AC sampling, in a subset of patients, and based on when the drug was delivered, then you can model the half-life. That's the best way to do it because that's actually in humans. Many times they don't do that and they'll do that in animals, but it's the same thing. So if you do it in primates, for instance, you inject it as you would normally into the eye and then do PK sampling thereafter. And from that, you can model the half-life in a animal. In general, the half-life in a monkey is relatively similar to a human, but obviously the size of the eye is different. So in the case of aflibercept and ranibizumab and most of our recent anti-VEGF drugs, in fact, this PK modeling is done during phase 3 to come up with a half-life that's usually placed into the label.
And do they ever model it based off serum concentrations? Is there enough medicine that gets out of the eye that we can actually measure it and model it based on that?
They can. Some of the modeling that was done for our ARVO poster did take some of the Zivaflibercept dosing to model the free aflibercept in a serum. And that's certainly one way to do it. It's safer to do it through the serum. But, you know, if you talk about half-life in a certain structure, it's more precise to use AC taps. But if you don't want to do an AC tap, you could model the half-life based on the free drug concentrations in the serum and how long it takes to disappear.
You know, we had higher dose medicines studied previously, ranibizumab, famously in the Harbor study and the Reed-3 study, 2 milligrams as opposed to the 0.5 milligrams, and didn't really see much of a difference. Why do you think we didn't see a difference with high-dose ranibizumab, yet we are now with the high-dose aflibercept?
You know, that's a really interesting question, because many people wrestle with that. If you look closely at the Harbor study, they were trying to do a few things with one study, and they didn't really test it in the same way that, for instance, aflibercept high dose was tested against the 2 milligram. They were testing it against ranibizumab, the 0.5 dose, but they were also testing as needed versus monthly versus a longer dose. And, you know, basically, they didn't show that it was more durable in that study. But if you look closely at the results, the high dose did improve things like fluid leakage, time to dryness, you know, things you'd expect that a higher dose of a drug should work out. But when you looked at the durability just by the study design, because it was very different than Pulsar and Photon, in the Harbor study, they didn't really design it to prove the longevity.
And if I'm not incorrect, didn't they treat based on any fluid? Like if you had any fluid in the Harbor study, you got retreated versus in Pulsar and Photon, they allowed some fluid?
Exactly. So, you know, there was definitely differences in study design, and study design will determine many things. And you could design a study to prove durability. You could design a study to prove efficacy. In this case, the durability was shown very nicely of aflibercept in the Photon and Pulsar studies that unfortunately we didn't see with the high dose ranibizumab.
And you mentioned Pulsar and Photon, two phase three clinical studies, Pulsar for neovascular AMD and Photon for diabetic macular edema. Just briefly, what are some of the highlights of those studies?
Well, you know, both studies were randomized studies. They were comparing 2 milligrams dosed normally, which would be at an 8-week interval, versus the high dose dosed at either 12 or 16-week intervals. The caveat, though, is that if the patients had some loss of vision or increase in OCT, there was some dose regimen modifications that would occur periodically during the study. In the first year of the study, you could only reduce the treatment interval. But like we do in clinical practice, in the second year of the study, if the patients were doing well, so they had very little fluid, very little OCT changes, you could actually increase the interval. And that's the most exciting part of the study is that, you know, first of all, the patients did well in both the Q12 and the Q16-week interval. But more importantly, in that second year, when you could actually increase the dosing interval, we also saw very nice increases. And the durability of the drug was really highlighted in the second year of the study. And this is both Photon and Pulsar. It wasn't like they did it only in one study, and in the other study, it was a completely different finding. Essentially, 80 to 90% of the patients remained on the interval they were placed on at baseline. So they remained either on a 12-week dosing interval or a 16-week dosing interval throughout the 2 years. And when they did a post-hoc analysis to kind of see how many patients dropped back below 8 weeks and even below that, even up to 4-week intervals, had that been allowed, which it wasn't in the study, a very small percentage of patients would have required 8-week dosing intervals. It was, you know, less than 10%. So, you know, really very powerful results for our patients, because the same safety as aflibercept 2 milligrams, the same efficacy in terms of visual acuity, but a dramatic increase in durability. Some of these patients at their next assigned visit were at Q24-week intervals, which is, you know, spectacular.
Do you think these studies, Pulsar and Photon, which I love that they're both identically designed, you know, it's 3 monthly doses, and then they were, prior to the study, randomized either that 12-week or 16-week interval. Is that how you're going to treat patients? Your new wet AMD patient or your new DME patient, are you going to give them 3 loading doses and then immediately extend them out to 3 months? Or are you going to do something different than what we saw in the study?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I design a lot of clinical studies, as do you. And when you design a study, you're talking several hundred sites with investigators of varying levels of expertise. And so you define a protocol that says, you know, using these precise measures, this is how we're going to treat all the patients in a clinical study. But in clinical practice, most of us use treat and extend, and there'd be no reason to simply jump from a 4-week dosing interval all the way to a 16-week dosing interval, even though the patients did it relatively successfully in a study. In my patients, I slowly get there. In patients with wet AMD, I'm more likely to go with a roughly 2-week interval increase if the patients are doing well. With diabetes, I'm more likely to go at a 4-week interval because there's, you know, if I miss the interval, there's a little flexibility in those diabetic patients.
You know, I find that I've been very impressed with the results of 8 milligram in clinic, especially with that handful of treatment naive patients that I've been able to get it approved for pretty early. And what I'm finding is that I can very rapidly extend them. And it's the first drug that I felt comfortable extending my wet AMD patients a month at a time. So I'll inject them, bring them back in a month. If they're dry, I'll treat them and bring them back in 2 months. And if they're dry, I'll inject them and bring them back in 3. Essentially, I'm getting to that 3-month interval, but I'm taking that little baby step in between for that third injection to make it at 8 weeks instead of keep it at 4. Is there any caveats or pearls that you think our listeners could take home about utilizing 8 milligrams in the treatment naive patient?
Yeah, the patients who are treatment naive that we use this on, which is a small proportion because of so much step therapy that goes on in the Cleveland area, do remarkably well. I 100% agree with you on that. These patients probably can accelerate at a much faster rate than what I'm doing them at. And to me, you know, there's two use scenarios. One is that where the patients are doing really well early on. So this idea of a non-responder is getting less and less with these newer drugs that we have. But the other thing, you know, my other use scenario for this are the patients who are doing well on 2 milligrams of aflibercept. So these are the patients, they may be at Q12, maybe even Q16-week intervals with the aflibercept 2 milligram. And these are perfect candidates to move to the 8 milligram because I know for a fact they can do exactly what they were doing with 2 milligram, but maybe I can actually get them to that elusive Q24. You know, I was about a quarter of the patients at their next visit in Pulsar and Photon were up to Q24. And that's my goal. And the patients love it, right? I'm saying, I'm going to start you off early on with the same dosing interval. So we can't compare apples to apples, bring them back, say 12 or 16 weeks, depending on what they were on previously. And then at that point, if they're doing well, start moving towards that Q24. I haven't quite got there yet because, you know, we haven't had the drug long enough. But I mean, imagine a wet AMD patient where I could treat them every 6 months, keep the same safety and efficacy, and don't lose vision over time. I mean, that's really the goal of our therapy, is to prevent that downward trend that we see because patients, physicians, caregivers get burnt out from visits and try to extend it themselves.
Yeah, you hit on something really special, I think, and that is a really rapid way to debulk our clinics. You know, it's funny, 15 years ago, you'd say in a room at a meeting, who wants to be busier, and about half the hands would go up. Now you're in a retina meeting and you say, who wants to be busier? And no one raises their hands. We are all so busy. But if you can take those patients that are stable at 8, 10, or 12 weeks on 2 milligrams, it's such an easy switch. You say, this is the same medicine you're on. It's just a higher dose. It's like giving you a bigger cell phone battery, you know, with the same phone that you've always known and loved. And they don't ask questions. They just say, that sounds great. Let's do it.
Yeah. I mean, it's very easy to switch patients to this who are doing well on aflibercept 2 milligrams for that very reason. And interestingly enough, I was talking to one of our colleagues in the UK and they had to add Saturday clinics. And the reason they had to add Saturday clinics was just to keep up with the volume of injections. And many of those injections were being done by nurses in the UK. And they found with these longer acting drugs that they've been eliminating those Saturday clinics. So you're 100% correct. It gives us time back, which is one of our most valuable commodities.
So what have been some of the challenges that you faced when integrating the 8 milligrams into your clinical practice, Peter?
You know, I think the hard part is that many carrier directors don't realize I'm trying to save them money when I'm asking to switch to the 8 milligram dose. And I have this sort of form letter that explains to them, I'm not trying to do increase the per injection cost for this patient. In fact, what I'm trying to do is reduce the overall cost for the patient. And it's some carrier directors get it. And if I'm a carrier director, I'd be telling everybody to go to 8 milligram because it'll probably save me money in the long term. But you know, that's one of the hard things is to get the carrier directors to understand it. The other is you know, it takes a while in many of these step therapy insurances to get to the level where I could put a place a patient onto 8 milligram. I'm required to do some of the other drugs that are out there before I get to it. And in a final area that makes it difficult to implement is, you know, the quirk of the label requires me to get beyond the 7-week dosing interval after a few injections. And some of my patients, they may have been at every 4 weeks, aflibercept 2 milligrams, or every 4 weeks, faricimab. Nothing I got can get it beyond it. So I try the aflibercept 8 milligram and I get it to 6 weeks. You know, I got it better and they're happy. But that elusive 7 weeks is required based on a label. So hopefully that will be changed in the future when people realize even a 2-week increase for many of these patients would be great, those super hard to treat patients.
Yeah, you know, I talked to some people internationally and some locations have no limits. They can give it every month. And I say, if you could give this every month, it would be the perfect medication, like because it drives people out. If you can give it every month, those frequent flyers. Which reminds me, what is it that makes a person a frequent flyer? What's your hypothesis around why we see some people who just constantly need VEGF suppression?
Yeah, I wish I could answer that, John. I mean, that's something we've been trying to figure out with AI and machine learning to see, are there any sort of biomarkers that we could predict who would be the frequent injectors? I think we have more in a diabetes space, but in the wet AMD space, it's really hard to know. And in many of these cases, so for instance, the type 3 lesions, you just got to hit them so hard at the beginning, otherwise you're going to lose. And so, you know, you hitting them with the best medication you have early on is so important. It's what I teach my fellows. You know, these type 3 lesions, you could lose so quickly if you have a company that's requiring you to start with bevacizumab. I mean, do everything in your power to switch quickly to your strongest medication because the patient may permanently lose that vision and you're just not getting it back.
And what about safety with this medicine? Have you noticed any unusual side effects or anything that you're hearing out there as far as high dose that gives you pause or concern, either ocular or systemic?
Yeah, from a standpoint of safety, the clinical studies, it was essentially identical to aflibercept 2 milligrams. But I think the key thing is it's a higher volume. So if you have a patient who's had issues with a lower volume in the past, you're just going to need to take some steps. So for instance, what I like to do is ocular massage on these patients that have trouble even with the 0.05. And by doing ocular massage as opposed to like a topical or something like that, that little bit of pressure is enough to not worry about it. It's interesting. Like in 25 years of doing this, I've never done an AC tap. And then I talked to some of my colleagues who AC tap all the time. That AC tap, it's that patience and allowing the perfusion to return that's sometimes scary to do. Now, I'm not saying that's what's happening with the 8 milligram dose. I just find that ocular massage really prevents that from happening.
And I agree with you. I've never done an AC tap on anybody. It has always come down. The only time I worry is the neovascular glaucoma patient.
Sure.
And that's one where I'll reduce the volume a little bit. And I still have not really needed to do an AC tap. What about future directions? Future directions with high dose and future directions just in general. Is this going to be a trend? Are we going to see more medications going towards high dose? Or is this going to be something isolated to aflibercept?
Well, it's interesting, right? So previously, we always felt that maybe the high dose really wasn't going to be all that beneficial. If you were going to design a study and base it on Harbor, for instance, you would have designed it very differently. So I hope that we'll see this as a sort of life cycle management for future anti-VEGF drugs. But it's interesting. If you watch nightly news these days, all you hear is that if you have wet AMD, you should be dosed every 16 weeks, which I really wish was true. It would be nice if we had a drug that everybody was 16 weeks and maybe 50% or more were longer than that. Then we'd really have something to write home about. But even with our best drugs, we still have some patients with those high VEGF loads that require more frequent injections.
Peter, I'm so happy that you joined me. I think you've really help lay out a very logical rationale behind higher molar dose translating into clinical practice. I look forward to seeing you at the next meeting. What meetings are you going to this year?
Oh, we've got a bunch. I mean, it's an exciting time for retina. We're going to Europe a lot, right? We have Lisbon, Stockholm, Barcelona. So we have a lot of trips across the pond, which is fun. I wish they weren't all right in a row this summer, but they're all in cities that I love. So I'll bring my camera and catch up with you and go some landscape photography with you.
I love it. So for our listeners, if you see Peter or myself at any of the meetings, please come up and say hi. Peter, thank you again for joining us. And I look forward to catching up with you this summer.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.